No man could cross it. Good thing we're not dealing with a man, huh? So, I do want to point out something before we get into the main topic of our sermon today. I wanted to show you the difference between Steve Trevor, that was the guy in the trench with her, his view of what he was there to do, and Diana or Wonder Woman's view. Did you catch it? Steve was there to win a war. Diana was there to help people. It's a big difference, isn't it, in the mentality. If I'm just there to win a war, then casualties are acceptable. Loss is going to happen. I have to stay on mission. I have to stay on task. If I'm there to help people, if I'm there to rescue people, if I'm there to save people, if that's the mission, then you have to get that the mission has to become pliable based on the people that you encounter. Again, that's not the sermon today. That's a freebie. I won't charge you extra for that one, but that's a note that you need to take in. Today is the final week in our Wonder Woman series. Remember, we started this like the last week of May, and we dedicated the last week of April, and we dedicated the entire month of May to discussing some women in the Bible. And as I've already mentioned, today is definitely Memorial Day. It's the day that we remember those that gave their life for the country. And that clip started with the idea of war. And war does have casualties. And we are very thankful for those that serve our country. And especially, we remember those that gave their lives. So I would like to take a moment, if you're here today and you have served in the armed forces for our country, would you please stand? I'd like to have a moment of prayer for you. Would you please stand? Anybody that served, you can stand. I promise we don't bite. All right, let's have a word of prayer. Dear God, we do thank you for people that give their life in service, Lord. And that's what serving in the military is about, Lord. They serve their country at risk of their own life, Lord, and we thank you for them. And God, we just pray that you will bless their lives. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Give them a hand, and you may be seated. So, fitting that the woman that we're going to discuss today fit on this particular week, because this is a woman that lost much. However, in spite of how much she lost, as we tell her story usually, she is remembered unkindly. Now, in case you just got here, let's talk about where we've already been with the series. This is the last week. And remember, we started all the way back the last week in April. We started with the mother of all mothers. And we looked at the story of Eve. Not the story of Adam. We looked at the story of Eve and who she was. We then moved to the mother who God sees and gives. And we didn't talk about Abraham and Sarah. We talked about the story of Hagar and her contribution to the plan. And then we moved to a woman that maybe you didn't even know her name until I said it, Jochebed. Remember, she is the mother of Aaron, Miriam, and Moses. And she is the mother that was the sacrificing mother. And then last week, we talked about the mother of her nation. And by the way, somebody pointed out, I got that on the wrong week. I should have saved that one for Memorial Day. I'm like, no, I got a better one for Memorial Day. Just be patient. Trust me. Okay? But we talked about the mother of a nation. We talked about this woman named Deborah. And well, today, we're going to talk about a mother after God's own heart. Who is she? Well, her name is Bathsheba. And I know what you're thinking. I'm kidding, right? I mean, nobody talks about Bathsheba except for the event, the moment in time. How can you make a sermon about just Bathsheba? Well, we have to remember that the Bible never calls her the mother after God's own heart, but she definitely ends up with the man after God's own heart. And unfortunately, in the story, David gets a pass. When we tell the story of David and Bathsheba, usually we tell the story, and then David goes on to be the hero, and Bathsheba's life gets all but forgotten about, and she gets a very bad rap. She is remembered by more of the event than everything that happened in her life. And interestingly enough, when it comes to the event, we give David a pass, we dismiss him, and then we try to label Bathsheba as the woman that drug him down. Nothing could be further from the truth. So today, we are going to tell Bathsheba's story, not David's. Yeah, David will be there, but he's just kind of a character in the background, kind of like Steve Trevor. We're going to talk about who is Bathsheba. And the first thing I want you to see is Bathsheba comes from a godly family. 2 Samuel chapter 11, verse 3 says, "The man said, 'She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite.'" Now, I'm not a name dropper, but when God gives me a name, it's time for me to go figure out who these people were. And who were her parents, her grandparents, and her husband? Well, it says her dad's name was Eliam. And who is Eliam? Well, according to 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 34, he was one of David's mighty men. He was one of the guys that David trusted all the way at the back beginning before David was king. And then, well, Eliam had a dad, logically, and we're told that his name was Ahithophel, the Gibeonite. And therefore, we are dealing with a man that was enlisted with David who had a father. And, well, grandfather, well, he had his own history with David. 2 Samuel chapter 16, verse 23 says, "Now in those days, the advice Ahithophel gave was like the one who inquired of God. That was how both David and Absalom regarded all of his advice." Wow. So this guy, the grandfather of Bathsheba, was actually the spiritual counselor to David. And Absalom, now you should also know he's the one that also encouraged Absalom to rebel against David after the Bathsheba event. But doesn't this add a little context? A very mad grandfather over what happened to his daughter basically demised the downfall of David's kingdom for a while. And so it also tells us that she was married. And she was married to this guy named Uriah. And guess what? He was also one of David's mighty men. It tells us in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 39, that Uriah the Hittite was one of the original 37. So here we have David, when he hears these names, when he says, "Who is this woman that I see sitting out here taking a bath?" And he's thinking about what he's going to do with her, and he's sitting here thinking about all this stuff in his head. And they say the names, it's not like these are nobodies. These are people that had helped David become king. These are the people that had supported David and given him advice and done the fighting and done the dirty work when he was out there in the wilderness. These are the guys. So you would think that when David hears these names, maybe if nothing else, he'd say, "You know what? That's off limits because these are my guys. And this is going to end badly." But what I want you to take out of this is Bathsheba was not the girl seeking to trap David. Bathsheba wasn't out there taking a bath trying to get the attention of David, hoping to trap herself a man because she already had a guy. Bathsheba wasn't there to lure David away because she wanted to be queen. Bathsheba was just out there taking a bath. And that brings us to the event. Now, the event is not the main topic. By the way, that should be a 2 Samuel, not a 1 Samuel. The event is not our topic today, but you can't talk about Bathsheba until you go through this event. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around the roof of the palace. From the roof, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful. And David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Now, let's talk about the elephant in the room. Did Bathsheba commit adultery? Yes. She was married, not to David, but she did commit adultery. Is she responsible for her actions? Yes, adultery is a sin. All the way back to the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not. Was she placed in an impossible situation? Yes. I mean, this was David, king. In case you didn't notice, David had a violent temper when David didn't get David's way. When the king summons you to the palace, it's kind of like when mom calls you for dinner and uses all three names, you come. Okay? When she hollers all three names, that isn't the time to ask the question, "What do you want?" It's the time to stop what you're doing and get moving. So we need to realize that this part of the event really wasn't about Bathsheba's sin. It was about David. Because David was where he should not be. David was the king. He should be out fighting the battle with everybody else. But here he was wandering on a rooftop in the middle of the night. It was David that not only saw, he looked. It's one thing to see something you're not supposed to. You know, to catch a glimpse or a passing, but it says David looked and she was beautiful. Which means David didn't just look, David gawked. He's like, wow. David started to imagine. He put some context around what he wanted to do. And so, but that was David's sin, not Bathsheba. David instituted contact. It's not like Bathsheba looked up from her bath, oh, look, there's the king. Hi, king. No, it was David that initiated the contact. Even after he realized who she was, it was David that proceeded. David brought her to the palace. She didn't look for an invitation. She didn't come knocking on the door as a wandering soul. He sent somebody to get her. Even when God talks about the intimate affair, what did he say? David slept with her. He puts it all on David. It was David that later sent for Uriah to come home when he found out that she was pregnant. It was David that got him drunk. Remember? Uriah was honorable. He wasn't going to go home because he knew he should be out there with the troops. So David said, you know what? Fine, I'll get him drunk. And then I'll send him home. He'll sleep with his wife and my problems are all fixed. That was all David. It was ultimately David that signed those execution orders. See, this event that we kind of want to hang on Bathsheba and put around her to say how awful of a person it was, you do get that the next time we hear from Bathsheba, when Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. After the time of mourning was over, David had her brought. Wow, David's initiating yet again. David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But catch the end of the phrase, but the thing David had done displeased the Lord. See, this event was never about Bathsheba. This event was all about David. And so we come to the fork in the road, and usually what we like to do is now we want to take our turn to the right, and we just want to kind of follow the story of David. And Bathsheba gets to be the cast off after the event. Well, today, we're going to take the left. We're going to take a look at how Bathsheba was chosen by God and used by God. And you're probably thinking, well, I haven't heard this story. Good. I've got something you don't know. So maybe you'll be interested because you probably heard David's story 100 times. How many times have you ever heard Bathsheba's, the whole story? So Bathsheba lost her husband. That part we've already counted. By the way, she would eventually lose 2 husbands because she would outlive David also. So Bathsheba lost her husband, Uriah. And after she lost her husband, she would lose the child conceived from the affair. So the whole reason she ended up having to marry David was because she became pregnant. And then when she had the child, 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 15 says, after Nathan had gone home, the Lord struck the child that Uriah's wife had bore to David, and he became ill. And if you skip down to verse 18, the child dies. Remember I told you we were going to meet a lot of different mothers, types of mothers as we go through here? If you're ever a mother that has lost someone and you're a grieving mother, you get God understands that. As a matter of fact, here's a grieving mother. She had to deal with the loss of a child, which is probably the most difficult thing a lady can ever deal with, is the loss of a child. But this was her firstborn child. She had no other kids before, so that had to be hard to lose your firstborn child. But you do get, God understands that one too, because he gave his firstborn child for each and every one of us. So, but after that, we'll find out that Bathsheba actually ends up having 4 more children. According to 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 5, see, people are stamping me. I didn't know this. See, we're getting you some. Here you go. We can go compete with James on Trivial Pursuit. We'll just make sure our category is Bathsheba. Because I'm guaranteeing you, he couldn't answer some of these questions right now. 1 Chronicles chapter 3, verse 5 says, Shammah, I didn't name these people, Shobab, Nathan, and Solomon. These were the 4 by Bathsheba. So in Chronicles, it gives a list of all of David's kids. And guess what? She had 4. Well, okay, so what? 4 kids. Well, it's who the 4 were that is really, really, really cool. You see, because in Matthew chapter 1, verse 6, we are given the genealogy of Christ from the house of Joseph. And in the middle of that, right around verse 6, it says, David, the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. That's kind of funny. They won't even say her name. Okay, they couldn't say Uriah's wife. Yeah, that one. Nobody even wants to talk about her. But you do understand, she gave birth to Solomon, who would eventually become king, and thus establishing through the house of Joseph the line of Jesus. But that's not even the cool part, because how many kids does she have? 4. Well, if you turn over to Luke chapter 3, verse 31, we get another genealogy of Jesus, but this one is from the house of Mary. And it says, the son of Malaya, the son of Manaiah, the son of Matthew, the son of Nathan, the son of David. Who's Nathan's mom? Bathsheba. You get, she is the unique female, the only female that God chose to contribute DNA to both sides of Jesus' family. She's the linchpin. Isn't that not awesome? Could you not turn that into a great Trivial Pursuit question? But that is just so cool. This woman that is the outcast, they won't even say her name. They say, you know what? God's going to, I'm going to give her a special place. I'm going to give her a special designation. She's going to be this woman that is the linchpin, and it doesn't end. You see, Bathsheba shaped the kingdom as we know it. Now, if you know anything about kings and kingdoms, you understand that the firstborn son is the one that's supposed to be king when dad dies. But if you just even read the list of Bathsheba's kids, where was Solomon? Down the line. He was the last kid given to Bathsheba. But if you go to 1 Chronicles, you're going to find out there's a great big list in front of Solomon. And guess what? There were lots of people that should have had that particular throne, not Solomon. But you know, David's dealing with some things when it comes to Bathsheba. And so he makes Bathsheba a promise in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 28 through 30. Then King David said, call in Bathsheba. He'll say her name. So she came into the king's presence and stood before him. Then the king took an oath. As surely as the Lord lives, who has delivered me out of every trouble, I will surely carry out this day what I swore to you by the Lord and God of Israel. Solomon, your son, shall be the king after me, and he will sit on my throne in my palace. Wow. Okay, so take out Bathsheba. You probably only take out Solomon's birth. But you take out Bathsheba, and Solomon probably is never king. He's just another kid in the royal pecking order that's looking to be a duke or whatever those kind of people become. But he's never king. But because of the Bathsheba event and David trying to set things right with Bathsheba and trying to make things right for her, God's plan begins to unfold, all because she remained faithful. And I guess she sort of gets her dues eventually. In 1 Kings chapter 2, verse 19, we find Solomon's relationship with Bathsheba. And it's an important one. Now, he didn't listen to her, but just know that's just sons and moms. We don't always listen to mom. Maybe he didn't always listen to her, but he sure did respect her. When Bathsheba went to King Solomon to speak to him for Adonai, the king stood up to meet her. Wow, so mom comes in, son stands. And not only does the son stand up, he bowed down to her and sat down on his throne. So he gives her a bow, pays her some respects. But he doesn't pull out just any old thing for mom. And he says, you know what? He had a throne brought in for the king's mother. She had her own special throne. Isn't that just cool? And she sat down at his right hand. Why is that important? The right hand is the hand of power. Wow, this lady is a great big character in the story that we usually just write off as a woman taking a bath. She has a lot of interesting things in her life because she gave birth to the lineage of Christ. And then she helped shape a kingdom. And ultimately now she's here giving Solomon advice. And you know what? The funny thing is I haven't even given you the best Trivial Pursuit fact about this lady yet. There's one that I'm kind of guessing you don't know. See, because not only did she shape the kingdom, she shaped our perception of what makes a godly woman. See, Proverbs chapter 31 is known very much as the place where if you're looking for the poster child of what it means to be a godly woman, this is where all the sermons are preached. I cannot tell you, if you go out to sermoncentral.com and you just type in Proverbs 31, Mother's Day, the list is endless on Mother's Day sermons that have been preached from this particular verse. But do you know its origin? Because it's really interesting. You see, Psalm 31:1 identifies the writer of this as a gentleman named King Lemuel, and it says it was inspired by the utterance of his mother and what he taught him. And as commentaries and researchers set out to figure out who King Lemuel was, guess who it is? It's a nickname given to King Solomon by Bathsheba. So that means if this is indeed King Solomon, then the mother that actually gave King Solomon the advice on how to be a godly woman was none other than Bathsheba. Wow. This is the woman sitting in the bathtub. And here she is. She shapes the way we think about women all across our lives. But it isn't just about shaping a godly woman. You see, what we end up finding is that she learns some very valuable lessons from her encounter with David. She begins giving Solomon some godly advice from her ungodly experience. She learns some things here. And one thing she says is, do not spend your strength on women. You're bigger on those who ruin kings. It's not for the king. You think she didn't remember David's story? Watch where you put your eyes, Solomon. Don't ruin yourself on just the women that look pretty. Now again, Solomon didn't exactly listen to her, but it is very solid advice. But you think this didn't come from the heart when Bathsheba told her son this idea? Hey guys, don't just look at the beauty. I still remember that wise adage my youth minister told me. That face over cocktails is oh so sweet, but it ain't so pretty over shredded wheat. The idea that we're just going to look at the beauty of a woman and that's what's going to catch our attention. Yeah, my wife is like, oh no, I can't believe you said that. It's an old story. Ask my wife the story. I've told it to her a bunch. But anyway, it reminds her son it isn't about just looking at the inside. It's about looking at the outside. It's about looking at the inside. And that's the advice she gives him. But that's not the only advice she gives him here. To her son, she said, it is not for kings to drink wine, nor for rulers to crave beer, lest they drink and forget what has been decreed, and deprive all the oppressed of their rights. Let beer be for those who are perishing, wine for those who are in anguish. Let them drink and forget their poverty, remember their misery no more. How did David try to coerce Uriah into covering his sin? Get him drunk. What did we learn? Not a good move. And here is Bathsheba talking to her son Solomon. He says, hey, look, I got some advice from you. Don't use alcohol to solve your problems. Don't use something that is just going to try to cover things up. Don't try to just drink them away. This isn't the way you're going to solve your problems, King Solomon. Listen to me. I am going to tell you this isn't going to end well for you if you just depend on that way of doing business. She's going to encourage him to go and seek the Lord to solve his problems. Take your things to God to solve your problems. Turn away from this. But again, you can see the influence of that story. And as she continues to give advice, she tells us, speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. You think as she's uttering these words, she remembers the rumors that she heard about her first husband's death, how he was pushed to the front of the lines, and then that battle call was issued, and everybody else got the issue to retreat, but Uriah was left there to stand by himself. And he put to death, not for his sin, but for the sins that David had committed. And you think she hadn't already heard the rumors and the fact that Nathan had came and told David this, and David wanted to cover that up at that point too. You think she's not aware of the fact that it was David that sent the message signed by his own seal about telling the general, this is what I want you to do. And Uriah had no voice in his own death, not even given a chance. David murdered him, all to cover up his sin. And now here is Bathsheba talking to her precious King Lemuel, Solomon. He says, you know what? Don't be like your dad. Okay? Don't just write things off. Learn to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves. Don't just put people out there to twist in the wind. Sit there and be responsible for people, especially those that can't help themselves. Don't put people on an island. Sounds like she learned an awful lot from her experience. She closes out her little advice speak here, and she says, speak up for those who can... How's my turn the page? Speak up and judge fairly. Defend the rights of the poor and the needy. Solomon, you're going to have all of this wisdom, and you're going to have to learn what it means to be fair. Now, life isn't always fair. Things happen. But what she's telling him here is, hey, look, don't just go off on whims. Don't go off on temper tantrums. Don't make rash decisions. evaluate things, learn things, judge fairly in your life. And I began to look at the story of Bathsheba, and you know what? As I turned to the left, I realized something. She was crossing no man's land. Because there isn't another person in the universe that could have given this kind of advice. There's nobody else that lived her unique experiences that she could sit out there and tell Solomon, look, this is how you go about not just being a good king, but being a good husband, by being a good person, by being a good follower. You see, Bathsheba is the ultimate story of redemption. I mean, okay, it could have been easy for her, right? She was entitled to be bitter at God, right? After all she was doing was taking a bath. And first thing she knows, she's a widow. Then she finds out that she's a widow and she's remarried to the man that killed her first husband. You think God wouldn't make a good soap opera writer? Okay, seriously. So she's now married to the guy that had her husband executed. And then after that, she loses her child. You think she doesn't have the right to look at God and say, I quit. I give up. God, you just don't get my life. But she didn't. She didn't walk away from problems. She didn't sit there and make excuses about why she couldn't do what she needed to do because of her problems. She took her life and she went from a story that could have been a disaster to becoming a story of redemption. A woman that indeed was given a prestigious place in the lineage of Christ. A woman that indeed did help shape the kingdom, make sure the correct king ended up on the throne. A woman who not only captured the mind, but the heart of her son Solomon and helped guide him in his kingdom because guess what? She was the one from the right hand feeding the advice the entire time. Changes your perspective of her story. So let's talk about your story. I'm sure you've got things in your past. Man, we could sit here and swap stories all day long about the bad things that happened in our lives. I could probably match you story for story. Okay? And you know what? I don't have a corner on the market because you probably have some really bad things that have happened to your life. And here's the thing. All of those things, you have a choice. You can use them to let you drag yourself down, or you can use them as something that you can climb on top of and climb over as you follow Christ. You see, our perception of the bad things that happen in our life is really all about what we choose to do with them. If I tie them onto my life and I drag them on like a luggage, like a bag full of luggage that's just filled with all of the weight, then it's going to weigh me down. But if I use them as a stepping stone to show people, hey, look, this is what God can bring you from, and I become a living, breathing testimony for God. That's what I want you to take out of Bathsheba's story. Anything that's happened, God can and will use it if you're willing to give it to him. Now, Bathsheba's story of redemption began with the story of confession. She did have to acknowledge the sin that she was in. She did have to acknowledge all the things that happened. You know what? Our story has to start the same way. We have to start with the idea that Jesus tells us if you confess your sins before God, that he will be faithful to forgive them. And so the call goes out that, you know what, if you've got things in your past that you're struggling with, sins in your life, you know what? Bring them to Jesus. Maybe today is your day that you need to accept Christ as your personal Lord and Savior. You know what? Come on forward. We'll set you with somebody, open the Bible, and we'll show you what it means to be a Christian. Maybe here today you're just here and you're dealing with stuff. Join the club. Me too. Maybe today is the day that you take the lesson from Bathsheba and you take the stuff and you use it as the place that you climb over, not the place that drags you down. And maybe you just need somebody to pray with you today. You can come on forward, we'll do that. Maybe just right now as we do our time of decision, this is the time that you just want to talk to God yourself and say, you know what, God? My past is my past. I'm okay with it.